Blog Talk Radio.
Just a little more time is all we're asking for. 'Cause just a little more time could open closing doors. Just a little uncertainty can bring it down.
Good evening and welcome to another live Never Give Up show. I am Bailey Smith, your host. Tonight we are on our 78th podcast. And I'm really excited to be back on live. I know it's been a few weeks. I'm waiting on our guests to call in shortly. Remember, April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. I don't feel like we've had enough going on, enough awareness. So I just want to remind you guys, my listeners, it is Child Abuse Awareness Month, a couple of more weeks. And, you know, domestic violence is child abuse, sexual abuse is abuse, child abuse. Our COALA number is 563-999-3044. Or you can listen live at blogtalkradio.com/the Never Give Up Show. I'm going to introduce our guest in the meantime. Hopefully she's going to call in shortly. She is 3 hours behind. Tonight's guest is Kathy Amia. She is a founding member and executive director of Protective Makua, a Hawaii-based 501c3 legal services and advocacy provider with members nationwide and in several foreign countries. Protective Makua is a community-based Hawaii non-for-profit organization. Its mission is to reform family courts to protect abused makua, which are parents, keki, which are kids, when reporting domestic violence without fear or of retaliation, discrimination, litigation, abuse, or the threat of losing custody of their children. Catherine was the founder and former executive director of the Pacific Alliance to Stop Slavery in Hawaii, responsible for reforming Hawaii's promoting prostitution law, as well as the introduction and passage of Hawaii's first survivor-centered anti-sex trafficking law, HB 1902 of 2016. In 2004, with the help of the New York-based organization Equality Now, they led a campaign involving grassroots public action and legislative advocacy, resulting in the passage of Act 82, which was in 2005. The first state law in the U.S. to outlaw sex tourism from conducting street outreach in the early 2000s to their present. Direct advocacy with adult and child survivors of trafficking. Catherine has been involved in every aspect and stage of the healing process with survivors of both labor and sex trafficking. I'm still waiting on her to call in. If anybody would like to call in the meantime, 563-999-3044. I'd be very happy to hear from you. I know that Catherine works as an advocate and helps people in so many ways. I watch I've seen her on social media, and she brings a lot of attention to many, many cases, including Narcus Bradley's, what we will call murder, or untimely death, or who knows. You know, I know she was bringing a lot of attention when that had happened. So I am hoping that she will be calling in very soon. Again, our phone number is 563-999-3044. If you are listening, feel free to call in. I don't want to sit here by myself. I also want to mention that tomorrow I will be on tomorrow afternoon, Wednesday, April 19th at 12 p.m. noon. I will be on Power Your Life with Dr. Joanne White. It will be a one-hour live show, and I hope that you guys can call in. I will be talking about my book, Married to an Illusion, A Survivor's Guide to Identifying and Escaping Narcissistic Abuse. And it would be nice to know that some of my peeps out there are able to listen in. I know it's the middle of the day. So I will be posting more information about it. In the meantime, while I'm sitting here, I could mention that Grayson's Law passed, I believe, the final House committee, and I think it goes to the governor next, if I'm not mistaken. And that is a very, very, very big, huge moment for us in Florida. It should have happened last year. But it happened this year, and it was unanimously, and hopefully it will bring some sort of change to Florida's laws and the family court system and dealing with the police. Speaking of child abuse, getting restraining orders. I'm sure Allie Kessler will be posting a lot of information on social media. So look out for that. Catherine, we're waiting for you to call in. 563-999-3044. Anybody else want to call in the meantime? If you're listening, I'd appreciate it. I'm here by myself. I did confirm with her today. But like I said, she is 3 hours behind us. So, yep. So here I am. I had been looking at, Catherine's website, protectivemakua.org, and it's very, very impressive. Protective parents have the right to report domestic violence or intrafamilial child sexual abuse without retaliation, bias, or discrimination. That's one of the things that their biggest thing that they are working on. I know that she has been helping many moms filing appeals and dealing with the family court system. And, you know, is a very big, busy person and agreed to be on my show tonight, and I don't know where she is. So if you're listening, please feel free to call in so we can chat. I've never had this issue before. So I've been getting great feedback on my book. I think she's here. Hold on. Hi, Catherine. Hello. Hello, hello. I don't hear you. Do you want to try calling back? Or maybe you're on mute? This is why I like when my callers call in a little early. Again, it's 563-999-3044. I don't know why she would have an issue. Shouldn't be a problem. We haven't had an issue with people calling in. So I was saying that I've had a lot of good feedback on my book from all different angles, and I feel really good about it. I hope you guys get a chance to go out and purchase a copy. You can get it on Kindle, or if you go to smashwords.com, it's on all different platforms, $3.99. Please leave reviews. Those are very helpful. Catherine, we're waiting to hear back from you. 563-999-3044. Again, anybody else that would like to call in, we would love to hear from you. I'm just trying to see if I got any messages while I talk, from our guest. This is why I always ask to try and call in a few minutes earlier, so that we can make sure we don't have any issues with the call-in. I don't know. I'm actually going to see if one of my kids can call in, just so I could see if I can if they have an issue. So yeah, like I was saying about my book, Married to an Illusion, A Survivor's Guide to Identifying and Escaping Narcissistic Abuse. I've been getting some really good feedback about it, that it's very educational, very informative, and I do hope that it is, you know, the book that people will purchase to learn all they can, you know, on narcissistic abuse. So I was just texting my son while we're waiting here to call into the show to see if there's an issue with the call-in number, since my guest tried to call in and I did not hear them. Catherine, who is a protective makua, a protective mom, And one second, here's my child. Hello? Do you hear us? You hear me? Okay.
Yeah,
thank you, sweetie.
I love you.
Love you too. Okay, so my line is working. It's not me. It's not our call-in number. So if anybody wants to try calling in, please, Catherine, try again. Maybe from a better phone, 563-999-3044. Again, you know, I really was excited to have her on. I know she is working specifically on one case right now that is absolutely insane. There were a lot of danger situations. You know, when you're dealing with a family court, you know, family court organization, it's very unfortunate, powerful organization, and you have so many people that are working together against a protective parent to keep children away from them. And as long as either the mother or father are the healthy parent, they should be working together to co-parent. And if they are not, and one is building this organization, working with the organization of people within the court system, then they are not the healthy parent. And it breaks my heart to see such horrific things when it comes to children and the courts. The trauma that is done could never be undone, especially if they are old enough to understand what's going on, and especially if there's child abuse or sexual abuse involved. These are lifelong traumas. And I can tell you that it is not a pretty picture. It is not a pretty picture. I'm just messaging Catherine to see if she can. Anybody else out there? Please call in. Again, 563-999-3044. I always ask my guests to call in a few minutes early so we don't have this problem. Again, like I said, when they're calling and they're in a different time zone, sometimes it's difficult. You know, I do believe that she wanted to be on tonight, and she really had a lot to share. You know, it's unfortunate that, you know, she's not here. Anybody else, if you're listening, it would be nice if you can call in, join me sitting here ranting. I'm just looking through my emails to see if I've heard anything. No. I don't know. Okay, so we have somebody that may call in. I'm asking any of you to call in. My guest hasn't been able to connect. So I'm sitting here yapping, talking, which is something I do love to do. But I don't really like to do it by myself. So if you are listening and you hear me ranting and raving and talking, I do hope that our guest will make it on tonight. I'm sure there's a very good reason if she didn't have a good connection. But it's 563-999-3044. I'm here on the Never Give Up show. Bailey Smith, your host, my 78th show. I would love to have somebody call in so we could chat until hopefully our guest is able to call in. And this doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. Because my son just tried to call in and had no problem. So I'm watching the time, the on-air time, slowly make its way down. So this shouldn't be a problem. Again, it's 563 area code 999-3044. You probably do have to put dial 1563 prior to that. My people, they feel bad for me. Catherine, I hope you can make it back on. I don't know what the issue is. Don't know what the problem was. I've had this problem on another platform, but I never had this problem on this platform since I started my show. The time is clicking, it's showing I'm live. So I don't know what the issue is. I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, I'm watching the countdown of the time. So oh, man. This is why I always ask my guests to try to call in a few minutes early so we don't have this issue. I was able to log on, so I don't know. Oh, there we have. There we go. Stacy, here to save the day, I think. Not Stacy. Who is this?
Can you hear me?
Hi. Who's calling in?
Jessica?
Hi, Jessica.
Oh, you can't hear me?
Were you,
I'm
listening, were you listening to me
I'm
talk?
Listening.
Yeah?
Yes, I was. I'm sorry. I've been doing my little walk, so I have my Beats on. I wasn't sure if Mike would be active on these or how it would go because I'm outside.
Let me
actually
see if this is our – is this Catherine or Stacy? Hello?
I'm here. It's Stacy. Yeah, I'm here with you guys.
Hi, Stacy. Thanks
Hi.
For saving me.
I'm putting myself on mute.
Jessica.
All right, I'm putting myself on mute to listen to you guys.
Okay, I don't know what happened with our guest. She did call in. I'm going to keep you open in case you want to join us, Stacy. I appreciate you guys calling in to save the day.
Who's your guest for tonight?
It was Catherine, Protective Makua. Catherine. Catherine.
Yeah, I'm
really
worried about.
What'd you say?
I said I'm really worried about her. I have been following along with what's going on with Julie Valdez and Catherine.
Yeah,
and
she
she
did call in. She did call in. She just didn't hear me. I couldn't hear her.
Talking about. Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, I've been in touch with her through social media and through emails all day. I always ask my guests to call in a few minutes early so that we don't have this problem. Stacy, you know who Catherine is.
Well, I know who she is, and I certainly don't mind standing by because I'm very concerned with the things I've been reading. Huh? Yeah.
No, how do you pronounce her last name?
Well, it's
Jessica.
Definitely. Let me see. Oh goodness, I can't pronounce it.
Almia and Aizen. She is. She's works with the. She calls herself Protective Makua. She's from Hawaii.
Yep.
You know who she is. Stacy, you know who she is.
How do I know
her? She did a whole thing on Narcus.
Oh.
A whole TikTok or wheel or whatever you want to call it. She's been helping.
I see.
You know
Valdez.
What I'm talking about?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just. See if she is sending me a message at all, but she's 3 hours behind. But I was in touch with her today. I've been in touch with her. I asked her to be on the show last week. She is a very busy woman. She does a lot of work helping a lot of people. I was hoping she would talk more, about the Julie case. I don't know, Jessica, if you're on Instagram, are you?
I am. I don't really find too many people on there, because I'm being honest with you. I don't use Instagram. You know how you just can't really use it? I don't make videos, so as far as a platform for speaking, I choose Facebook because you can write more, but I've been thinking about doing videos more because, like, people just don't read. They just don't have time to read through all the horrors and, what's going on. So I have considered making videos. So,
I did one yesterday, and it was very successful, I have to say. If you post it to TikTok, my publisher, my writer has been bugging me because she said, you have to do very small clips within 1 to 2 minutes. And I don't know how to talk for 1 to 2 minutes. So I did one just to introduce myself and the book. So now I have to sit and do a whole bunch more. And I got this special lighting. Because you don't want to have shadows or anything, so I could read some excerpts from my book. I'm educating people, so that's how you draw in buyers or whatever. I mean, I did one, I posted it all over and on Instagram, and somebody's like, "Oh, I just bought your book. I'm reading it." Somebody I don't know. So
that's awesome.
It's making its way. Yeah, I mean, I wrote it, to educate. It's not just my story. And so many people are going to relate to it, and I think it's a great book for for others, for people that are, to show people they're not alone, or to show people who may be looking to get into a relationship, the signs. So I'm coming from so many different angles, from religion point of view, from all different places, and I've gotten feedback from all different people. And so far it's been really positive. So, you know, and it, like I was saying before, and I'm not trying to sit here and promote myself, but unless you guys want to chime in and speak about something, anybody else want to call in 563-999-3044? Obviously, there's no issue. People got in. I mean, you're calling from cell phones. I'm calling in from a cell phone. My son just called in before just to make sure that it was an issue, because Catherine did call in the call and she didn't hear me. I couldn't hear her, and the call dropped. Maybe that's her. Hold on a minute.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Is this
Hi.
Our guest?
Yeah, it's Kathy. How are you?
Hi. I don't know if you've been listening to me yapping away.
I actually just got on the phone. Sorry, I was working on a case.
Oh, no problem. Well, welcome. I have Stacy and Jessica here. If you guys don't mind, I'm going to mute you guys. Okay, and I'll bring you guys back on shortly. Welcome. So you missed my whole introduction and my yapping for the last 20 minutes. But welcome. I appreciate you calling in and being my guest tonight and making time to share whatever it is that you are able to share. I know that you're a very good person, and you're out there helping so many people, especially Julie right now, and it's incredible.
It's been pretty crazy.
Well, one of my questions is how did you get involved in all of this?
Well, I'm a survivor parent myself. I didn't birth the children that were taken from us, but they belonged to my ex-wife. But what I witnessed going through the whole process with her was so alarming and traumatizing. And I was, you know, already an advocate for trafficked kids. That was what I was doing at the time, was, you know, anti-human trafficking work. As a former federal level consultant during both the Obama and Trump administrations, which was a trip. But I did a lot of advocacy for my ex and the kids while it was happening, and they were taken eventually. And I didn't know anything about parental alienation or Richard Gardner or the Children's Rights Council or the National Fatherhood Institute Initiative or the AFCC, none of that. But I found out the hard way, as most of us do, and we feel like we're the only ones out there that this is happening to. And so I decided to really try and do something about it. So I applied to law school at age 47, and I got in, and it almost broke me, like it does everybody, the first year. And then I went into really the hardcore studies that I wanted to study off the bat about why this is happening in Hawaii. I thought it was just in Hawaii. So I started analyzing our family law code. And what I found was just this huge conspiracy that was federally funded by the request of high level fathers' rights, or shall I say men's rights groups and leaders in high positions that pled after Roe v. Wade, went to Reagan, and then thus was born the family values agenda, which lasted throughout his administration, George Sr., his administration, the Clinton administration, George W. Bush Jr., And continues today. And so I did a deep dive. I spent about 15 hours a day in the library every single day.
Wow.
Just studying and finding the paper trail that they left behind, because back then they didn't realize that soon after their narcissistic declarations in front of Congress and the lies that they said about moms and abuse and incest and domestic violence and all of that, they didn't know that all of that stuff would eventually become public and accessible through the internet, something called the internet. So, and it felt like just like, it was like an overwhelming feeling. Like, you know, I felt like the only one that had this knowledge of exactly how it was done, the money trail, everything, who was connected. Very scary stuff. And then I was like, I can't be the only one to know this. So I created a website and I put it all on the website. And made it specific to Hawaii, and it is under construction, because by the mid-2000s, this one group, our common enemy, one group called the Children's Rights Council, created by a man, a Maryland attorney named David L. Levy, created the Children's Rights Council, and they boasted by the mid-2000s changing the state laws pertaining to custody and the best interests of the child to presume joint custody as in the best interest of the child automatically. They boasted changing those laws in over 30 states in the nation and in 8 different countries, foreign countries, federally funded. Wow. That's illegal, actually.
Yep.
You can't do that.
Well,
all
this is illegal. All our constitutional rights have been so violated, it's like it doesn't exist.
Right, but it does exist. They just do things very unconstitutional. People, and you know, being in law school, I know this for a fact. There's a stigma about going into family law. Like, no one wants to go in it. It's like too much work. You know, they do things like completely backwards, and it really like discourages students to want to go into the field. But really, like, it is really the field that law students should go into, because it's the new frontier for civil rights and human rights, for that matter. Because mothers and children are the basis of all civilization. You know.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. So did you became an attorney?
I'm not. So in my third year, I'm, you know, part-time. In my third year, there was a crisis that happened in the Julie Valadez case. And so, as you may or may not know, she won 4 appeals. So she essentially won and set case law for protecting victims of domestic violence. But upon remittitor, or rather when the appellate court sent the case back to the trial court to adjust correctly, the trial court judge, a man named Ralph Ramirez, the second presiding judge, refused to comply with the order. And
it is unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like Narcus.
Yeah.
It goes to the highest courts in the state. Of that state or whatever, and then they send it back down. It just doesn't make sense. It's mind-boggling.
That's what Narcisse's case clearly represented to the world. Remand is not relief, but judges think that that's the end of the story, and now she's dead. Actually, it was Narcisse Golan that brought me and Julie together. Because everyone, all of us, we were all devastated by her death, her sudden death. And I feel so much for her champion sister, Maureen, and her partner, who are taking care of Bradley and just suffering through this horrible appellate course of action by Ann Donnelly, who's the worst judge in the district.
Yeah.
and she just represents everything.
She's a murderer. She's a murderer. She's got blood on her hands.
So Narcisse's death, as it affected us all, it really like just compelled me to do a eulogy piece on her, and calling out Judge Donnelly and her, you know, murderous ways, so to speak, not to put it too lightly, but yeah. And then Julie saw it because I actually highlighted her case in one of the segments of that short that's on TikTok. And she contacted me through Protective of Makua, which is the agency I started after, you know, putting up the website and all that.
Didn't I repost it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so... Yeah, I haven't been online lately because of, you know, getting heavily, subdued by this case and other cases that I've been working on. I've done, like, a couple of appeals now under supervision, my supervising attorneys, that have challenged the use of parental alienation as not only inadmissible in courts, but unconstitutional and discriminatory on the basis of sex. So one of the critical things that, you know, my writing, my legal analysis and research has really tried to put forward in appellate courts, which I'm trying to share through cases like Julie's, and I've got a couple of cases in Hawaii that are taking root, that are on appeal, as well as some other cases that I've kind of influenced, you know, with colleagues in other states. But the argument is that mothers and fathers do not share the same constitutional level of rights. The courts currently see that as equal, but it's not the same. And it was basically based on the biological bonding between mother and child. And that is something that men do not share, or shall I say, non-birthing parents, non-gestational parents do not share that same bond. It's more permissive. It's permissive for both mother and father, or non-gestational and gestational parents, as far as, you know, do I want to keep the baby? Do I want to abort? Do I want to, for both, you know, mothers and fathers, but categorically only gestational parents, which are mothers, only they, if they choose to carry the birth to term, only they create such a strong emotional, spiritual, and physical, biological, scientifically proven bond that starts in utero with their child and lasts several years after the child is born. And that development and that bond is so critical to all kinds of positive development. And if you rupture that, then, bad things happen.
You're destroying.
Trauma ensues. Yeah. You're destroying a person. You're destroying lives.
Yeah. I know. Trust me.
And yeah. I'm sure all the listeners out are nodding their heads.
Yeah.
Whereas non-gestational parents, typically fathers, really can just jump from person to person and not really have that bond. Now, that isn't to say that they can't form a bond, but it's not the same. And because those bonds are different, that raises the level of a mother's right to her child, custodial rights to her child, to a First Amendment protection. That's a First Amendment privacy right. It's an ordered liberty right that can be tracked throughout history and tradition in America. Well, in every single civilization on the planet, it's more ordered liberty than ordered liberty. So, you know, thanks to Dobbs, and it's the only thing that we can be thankful for in Dobbs, of all things, is the fact that they brought ordered liberty back on the table. Because if we're talking about ordered liberty, even according to Dobbs, well, let's bring back all that stare decisis then that they destroyed, talking about privacy rights, and bring it back to the basics. Bond between a mother and child is the basic bond. And so in order to abrogate even a slightest part of it, you need strict scrutiny, the strictest scrutiny available, in order to justify even curtailing that just in the slightest. And then every other parent has medium level scrutiny or intermediate level scrutiny, whatever. But for that fact, for that fact, and that unique private liberty interest right that mothers only have with their children should they choose to become mothers, you may not mess with for any reason unless there's a really good reason, like the scientifically proven physical abuse and scientifically proven mental abuse, psychological harm. Everything
or,
else, like
or drug
alienation,
or you know,
anything else,
drugs.
Is, even addicts have a better time regaining their custody than a safe mom in America if they're reporting domestic abuse, incest, or child abuse. That's pretty ridiculous.
I wanted to just say something, and then I'm going to bring Jessica and Stacey on because they were very nice enough to call in, and because they felt bad for me ranting and raving for 20 minutes.
Am I late?
Was I late?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
Hawaiian time. I thought it started on the hour. My bad.
So I wanted to. One second. So, you know, I do want to say one thing about father's bonds. Healthy fathers, okay, a healthy father can bond with their child, not in utero, but immediately after. But those are not the fathers that we're talking about. So I want to make that clear to our listeners. We are talking about because for instance, my youngest, who's now 19, him and his father bonded. My abuser, or sperm donor, whatever you want to call him at this point, was, you know, it was a planned C-section. He was my third, and my marriage was not good at the time, and I said, I want you in that operating room when I have this kid. And because I wanted him to bond immediately, and he always bonded with my kids, but I thought maybe it helped my marriage or whatever. And, you know, my youngest, who's now 19, was handed to my abuser, ex, whatever you want to call him, as soon as he was taken out. So they did form a very, very special bond. But when somebody is mental, and they were very close, and I've learned over the last 7 years, post-separation abuse, horrific stuff, and him abandoning my kids and leaving the state on probation, all of that kind of stuff, that, you know, he was creating mini-me's. My kids had to like the things he liked. Their bond was around anything to do with sports. So they never had healthy relationships. Although him and my youngest were very close. But the minute he left the state, and my son was 13 at the turn 19, my son cut him off. So, you know, obviously that bond wasn't strong enough because that's the kind of kid he is. You do anything to, you know, you hurt him, he cuts you off. And that was his choice, even though I got full custody, because my abuser left the state on probation. So, but they did form a very strong bond, and they were very close. Maybe it wasn't the healthiest, but so I'm saying it is possible, especially for healthy fathers, to form a bond once that child is outside the womb. But then again, you don't end up in this kind of situation in family court. You work things out, and you do what's in the best interest of the child outside of court. You don't bring, it doesn't end up in this kind of situation. That's when, that's the way it should be. That's healthy parents that love their children more than hate each other or whatever, however you want, or the father hating, loving his child more than hating the mother, which is what the problem, which is what one of the main big issues is. And that's outside the court, and then it's brought into court, unfortunately, and then they have their whole crew of people that back them up. So I just want, because, you know, I do have men listeners, and I always try to, you know, there are good fathers, and there are bad mothers. Is it more, obviously we see, because as advocates and being out there on the forefront, we see more of it that it's healthy, protective mothers versus fathers, right?
Yeah, actually the studies show that it's more, it's discrimination on the basis of sex. So like when mothers, and I believe the Meyer study as well as other studies that were longitudinally based and science-based studies, so hence credible, unlike the parental alienation theory, they prove that when parental alienation is used in courts, when mothers report domestic abuse or child abuse, then they get all of their custody taken away if they don't if they don't agree to some sort of joint custody. Whereas when fathers allege parental alienation, when fathers allege parental alienation against the moms, they have all of their, the moms have all of their custody taken away. Whereas when mothers allege parental alienation against the fathers do not get their custody taken away at all.
No, absolutely not.
Most of the time.
I watch a
unless
lot
they
of cases.
Do something
it's
very,
crazy.
Very unusually flagrantly bad or piss off the judge, which takes a lot.
Well, it's an $80 billion business a year. So, you know, how do we destroy a business that the government's a part of? That's really the question.
Well, you have to basically redo what the CRC or the Children's Rights Council did. You have to take away the presumption of joint custody. If you can't take it away completely, then when an allegation or a report of domestic abuse or child abuse is alleged, there should not be a presumption of joint at all. Zero. There was never.
Right.
There never used to be a presumption of joint.
Right.
Judges used to actually take each case as a case by case basis. They didn't use like a standard cookie cutter type of standard like that says, oh well, your child abuse has to rise to a certain degree. They didn't used to do that. Now they do because it's because the father's rights groups or the men's rights groups or shall I say misogynist rights groups convinced, you know, lawmakers and judges and
also there's a lot of money involved.
Yeah, lots, tons.
That's really what it's about.
And it's criminal child profiteering. It's extortion, it's RICO violations. It's a whole bunch of stuff. And now, you know, I'm in Canada and helping Julie and her son stay safe from continuing abuse. They're both whistleblowers. They both reported on federal crimes implicating Ricardo Valadez, the domestic abuser. They both reported that not only continuing abuse by Ricardo Valadez, but also implicating the Waukesha court, now the Walworth court. The Wisconsin bar, I discovered, is extremely nepotistic. They don't have a conflict of interest. They don't regulate their conflict of interest rule. There is really none. There's really no recusal, rule for judges. They get to decide themselves whether or not they can be biased. Or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really backwards. And then, you know, what they kind of uncovered is the fact that Everybody's asking, oh my gosh, what happened in Julie's case? It must be her fault, blah, blah, blah. Something must have went wrong. It must have been her fault, blah, blah, blah. Even though she won 4 appeals, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, even though, you know, it's undisputed that Ricardo Valadez is a domestic abuser and she suffers from a high lethality of, you know, high risk for lethality. You know, like, right. He said several times that he would kill her. What went wrong?
Yeah.
Everybody's saying, what went wrong? There's something that must have been wrong, blah, blah, blah. Well, what went wrong was the fact that all these judges were protecting the first judge, Michael Abrahamian.
Right.
Who
right.
actually, on
right.
the record, no joke, it's all in the record, used his orders sua sponte, which means on his own without any motion, to extort money from her. Period.
Oh, my
God. And so because
I'm watching a lot of crazy cases right now that are so similar.
He's one of the keynote speakers in the next Federalist Society gathering in Wisconsin, which is alarming enough.
She is? Julie?
No. Judge Abrahamian, the first judge in the case. You know, he hasn't been censured for bias. He hasn't been censured. He hasn't been investigated, as far as I know.
Is he on the wall of shame?
I don't know what that is. But, you know, all these judges who know each other are basically covering his butt him.
Yeah.
And now the current judge, who Abrahamian, you know, nominated as Judge of the Year for 2001, now Judge Ramirez has taken up that torch and behaves in much the same way, actually, in extorting more money from Julie, who's established as
like
an
Miami
indigent client.
It sounds just like the Miami judges. You know, I have Stacey and Jessica. Your mics are open. You know, there's Me Too Moms movement. You must see their stuff on Instagram. You can, there's one of them that you can send an email to about a judge and write something up about the judge and they'll add them to the wall of shame.
Oh, that's cool.
And it'll be out there. So, and these are things that I repost, many other people repost. Definitely, you know, I could see which, you said he's in Wisconsin?
Yeah, Waukesha County. Graduated from Yale Law School.
I'm going to see if there is a Me Too Moms Wisconsin. If not, I'll just send you the main one. You can email all the information about him, or Julie and let's get his face out there. Anyway, Jessica and Stacey,
well,
which one of you would like to go first? Your mic's open.
I just would like to visit that website. Can you tell it so I can look it up at the same time?
It's Me Too Moms. Okay. I don't know the email address off by heart, but if you go on to Instagram and look up MeToo_moms, I believe.
Gotcha.
And then a whole bunch of them will pop up. Stacey, right? Is this Stacey?
Yeah.
I'll forward you the email.
That's a difficulty with Instagram. It's just, you know, it's like so many different little underscores and symbols. It's just so difficult to find.
Yeah, but
and
you
don't
get
really
used
know.
To it. And... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine, Instagram's awesome, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. That's how I met Catherine, because she had, I think I... The first thing I did was repost that thing about that you did on Narcus from TikTok.
Yeah. Right.
Her mom actually just called me on Friday. She's in a bad place. I think that Maureen doesn't even tell her what's going on. And she was telling me all kinds of stuff, and I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God. And then I had to reach out to Maureen and find out what's going on because her mom gave me this whole story, and she's like, no, 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 don't listen to
her. Oh, well, you know, I don't know. I don't know about the personal, but I think it's best that, you know, like I am aware that there is a strict rule of confidentiality surrounding the case. So I believe that that's probably the reason for everyone's safety.
Well, no, her mom, for this exact reason, because there was a guy that was very close to Narcus that was at the house. Their kids are friends.
Yeah, yeah. So I believe this might be not appropriate for public consumption about talking about this. Yeah. So,
can I ask something?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hello. I don't mean to cut off because I just don't want to forget. It's a lot of information to take in. And I just want to say it's Jessica and Catherine. Thank you for all the insight because it's confirmed, you know, things I've heard for years. And I've been talking and friends with Julie since 2020, so 3 years now. And our cases are very similar, very, very similar. Shock to conscience, the whole thing. So many violations, and like you guys had said earlier, we have no rights. I feel like I regress to some kind of, just like I was saying years ago, which, you know, hunt, or, you know, I mean, it felt like, that's exactly what it felt like, and I was jailed. So, and I was assaulted and attacked and jailed. And I just want to point out by saying, how, Bailey, because I heard what you said, and I know we talked a little bit, I'm not just the wife of ex-wife of a narcissist, but I'm also a daughter of a narcissistic deadbeat father. So I definitely can understand the emotional bond between a mother and a child that is unbreakable. Everything Catherine said was spot on and absolutely agree with it 100%. Healthy fathers don't jail mothers, period.
Correct.
They know it's a different place. They know it's, the kids will be tormented. The kids will be, if not tormented, embarrassed that their mother has been jailed. And, you know, things like that. So I just feel like straight up, like, a healthy father would not jail the mother of his children. And we're going to jail for such bogus crap. And I was, and Catherine, I reached out to you, but I understand totally, like, you know, people don't respond, you know, Facebook messaging and all that is very easily hackable. It's very questionable. Who's on what side, who's doing what. So I totally get that. Especially being busy and overwhelmed with all these cases and all of this, it's just, it's overwhelming. I mean, it has completely aged me and destroyed my health, honestly. So I was really worried about Julie because I didn't know what was really going on. And I thought, oh my God, did she get jailed or things like that? Because I was jailed. And the craziest thing
tried.
Is that my ex, what?
Oh, they tried.
They tried.
They did try. They did try.
Well,
yeah.
As long as I know she's safe and not in that position and I can, you know, put that check on that one, mark that one as safe because I know of five other mothers facing that as well. And it's terrifying and it's draining because you can, it's like, you feel like powerless really at this point. It's like, you know, you said, it's just, I don't feel like it's just about money too as far, well, I know it's about money, but I mean, with the father's rights, my inkling at first was that based off of what I understood, I mean, this whole joint custody thing, I'm very transparent. I don't bash anybody at all, but I feel like it's just, we don't want to pay child support and lose our assets because how will we ever move on to our next family or victim or whatever, you know, it is that they're trying to achieve, because that's what it was with my ex. He didn't want to lose anything. He didn't want to lose his house. He didn't want to pay child support. He didn't want custody of those children. He or our children. He wanted to just punish me, continue controlling me, make my life hell and not give me anything and make it difficult for me to survive.
Correct.
And
that is the core of why they banded together in this conspiracy to change all the state's laws, unlawfully using federal dollars to do it, and in different countries as well. So this is a global crisis
for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you hit it right on the head as far as the intention.
Mm-hmm. And when you know what's interesting in my case, because I was trying to go a different route, Catherine. I see,
the judge threw me and my children out of our home and gave us 3 days to leave. The judge and the chief judge stated on the record my home was in foreclosure. It was foreclosing. There was nothing we could do. It was going up for auction. I had to get out. And guess what? I recently uncovered that it was definitely not. I have, you know, documents from the foreclosing attorneys that it was not in foreclosure and that they had been continuing the case, and they allowed my ex to move back in to the home.
Wow.
Now, at the end of the day, the safety of my children and all of that was, of course, most important. But when you're a stay-at-home mom and you're abused and you're scared, and I couldn't really – they ordered me not to leave the county. So that whole plot was to basically render me unfit. Like, if I'm homeless, now they can justify taking custody away, you know, because now that judge that was in my case, she sits on the appellate court seat. And it's just, I don't even understand. I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone, honestly. I don't understand how this is going on. So many women are like, I don't know what they're doing, and they're in the dark. They're just not standing up for their rights or realizing what's going on. And this is not about just or me or Julie. It's about our daughters, our granddaughters, all girls.
Correct.
You know?
Absolutely.
I don't
and we come from all
do,
walks
but...
of life and all political leanings. And I think we have the beginnings of a true, real, like, movement globally, because when you attack motherhood, that's a common thread that unites everyone. Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You don't mess with moms. And that's kind of our slogan, you know? It's like, it's the core that keeps society together, you know? Mothers
right.
are the original protectors. I mean, it's not fathers. I mean, I think that was like a slogan to kind of keep them involved. But really, the truth of it is the original protectors are moms. They stick around, typically.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that there aren't bad moms out there. There are, but for the most part, moms are the first line of defense when their child is hurt. They will do whatever it takes to protect their child. And you see it play out in court. That's why they get rendered homeless and penniless, because they will render themselves bankrupt to protect that child. Because money doesn't matter.
If I could chime in, because like so many times I wanted to write that, like, I was the, you know, daughter of a deadbeat narcissist. He wasn't abusive. I mean, he was, you know, he was definitely no cakewalk, but, you know, he wasn't physically abusive. He just was not a good father. He wasn't a good husband. Walked out on me and my mom. And, you know, it was interesting because, you know, it's not only, I wish I could shake some of these men and say, listen, it's not even always just about abuse, Catherine. I'm going to be honest with you. Some children are just not emotionally ready to be separated from their mom. They are just not ready. They don't want to say, you know, I was that way. I did not want to go with my father. And the fact that some of these fathers, they dip in and out, you know, it's like the child feel, you might as well just put the child with a stranger. You know, and that's what it felt like as a child for me.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, you know, I definitely see there's so many different sides to this. And I had some of the fathers groups on there, and I have asked repeatedly. It's hard to tell who's on what side, but I have deleted most of them, especially this one. But if ever there is someone, and Bailey, I say this too because we're pretty active on there, you know what I mean? If there's, I've only kept like James Kelly because he does seem to, you know, he stood up for Justina and little Tommy Valva. And I honestly, like, they even shared a story today. There was a man in Forsyth County. That's where my case was, or Davidson County, but Forsyth is Vista County. They're right next to it. But this man is, the woman shot her children in Winston-Salem. This is recent. And the fathers jump on that. Yep, there, you know, she's crazy. And meanwhile, I mean, they don't read between the lines, and there's not enough information yet. When I read the article, you know, they show pictures of the father on the ground and he's hysterical. Well, first of all, the children have the mother's names and they're under the age of 15, which indicates to me this father, if he wasn't present at the birth or he's been in and out of their lives, because they have their mother's last name. Most of the time, if the father's present, they will have the father's last name. But she was FaceTiming him while she shot herself. And it's sad all the way around. I mean, no child, I mean, it does, like you said, there are mothers who are, you know, not fit or they're not healthy mentally, whatever, but they don't ask why. And most of the time it's behind some kind of abuse, sexual abuse, rape, whatever. But this woman was educated and I'm really interested. She was a nurse. She was well-liked, you know, she traveled. And I'm thinking, you know, people that travel and have their education. They just don't commit, you know, suicide and kill their kids. Like, and she was FaceTiming her ex while this happened. So it's something you don't know. These men will tell you, like, they drive you. Narcissists will drive you to absolute madness, and they will get you. Yeah. It's like they want you to kill yourself. That's how it feels. So I'm interested to see.
Well, they're doing a very good job of it.
Yeah.
They're either doing it themselves, or they're driving women to end their lives. And I can understand that pain. I have never, obviously, been in a place where I would kill myself or kill my kids, but I have been at very low points, and this man is not in my life. But
yeah, they don't have to be. That's what I kind of meant by that whole thing. They don't have to be with you still to cause the control and the abuse.
I have nothing to do with him, but whether it's to one of my, well, two of my kids have nothing to do with him. They all had nothing to do with him, except recently one went back to him, my oldest, after I got him so much help. And you see the vicious cycle of brokenness and the trauma. And
is what it is.
It's the codependency, the victimization, and you know, it's his whole entire 25 years has been this way, and I don't even want to talk about it. It breaks my heart. But you know, he's still using one of my kids to get to me, to try to harm me, and you know, trust me, having my 25-year-old there is disrupting his life. You know, he's remarried, living his life, doesn't pay me back child support that he owes, nothing, hasn't given me a penny from the moment we separated. And, you know, I mean, I haven't seen him in years, nothing to do with him other than if he catfishes me on a dating site or sends me a crazy text or whatever from an unknown number. But, you know, so I have really nothing to do with him, but they've caused so much damage and wreaked so much havoc in the years that they caused it, that it's a lifelong healing journey. And when your children are working on theirs, it's really heartbreaking. And my kids are not babies. My youngest is 19. And you see the damage that they've done, and you know. Luckily, his brain's not fully developed. He's had help for years. I mean, he can be a functional, healthy adult, and my 23-year-old the same, you know. But you see this there's a certain sadness, there's a certain brokenness, and you know it. You know, I'm a protective parent, you know, and it's devastating. So, which is why I got so involved in the whole family court thing, because I know the damage. I know the ACEs. I know what happens if these kids don't go back to a normal situation with their mother and don't get the proper help. It's either we're starting a whole nother generation, and then I say, who's our future?
We're screwed if this doesn't change. I'm fearful, honestly. I'm truly and genuinely fearful with everything that's going on. It's also beyond all this, but we won't even get on that soapbox. But I think it's just manipulation with children. And Bailey, unfortunately, like I think at the base, children, they want to be accepted and loved by both parents. They do, but they don't have the maturity to realize, just like we didn't have the sense to realize, wait a minute, this relationship is toxic. This is not love. If you haven't been taught that or you haven't been in that environment, you're more prone to stick, you know, to kind of go through that cycle, you know, so you can't beat yourself up. Because my daughter, you know, has resumed her relationship with her father. Girls want to, you know, they want to be daddy's girl. I mean, and, you know, they want to be loved. And I say, hey, it's okay to love someone. I've taught my kids to be loving, forgiving. My kids are older now. You know, they're much older, and you can't control a child. I'm not their dad. I'm not the control freak, you know. My children also are very aware. I'm very, very lucky that they were aware that there was something very wrong with their father since age like 13, 14. they told me, Mom, something's wrong with him. You know, like, and it was like they didn't know what, but they said there something really wrong with this person. But, you know, they know the healthy boundaries. They know when I trust them, and they're very mature, and they know when to kind of back off. And he doesn't live near us, and we don't have to be, you know, it's like hours away and, you know, stuff like that. So they kind of know how to handle it. And a lot of times, you know, the narcissistic parent is very, like I said, they're in and out. If they're single, if they're bored, you know, all of a sudden they're father of the year.
Yeah.
You know, they want to be involved. And then the next thing you know, as soon as, you know, they get some other person to manipulate.
Supply.
Or oftentimes, yeah, they're manipulating the children. But, you know, whether it's the parent buying excess gifts or, oh, you can stay up later, go out and do whatever you want. When you're being the bad, you know, it's bad cop, good cop. You know what I'm saying? So you're the bad guy regardless when you go through teenage years and young adolescence. But they come back. They definitely come back, and they realize when they mature, hey, especially once they have their own children, they say, I would have never, never done that to my children. Like, they, you know, my ex threw us out and we slept in a car. And you're thinking, wow, and the judge still thinks this father walks on water and he's a great guy. He's a really, really good dad. That was her exact words.
Charmer.
Involved dad. And we slept in the car, you know, like in the middle of nowhere. Like, and he knew
crazy.
It and she knew it. So it's nuts. But is Catherine, or what, like, if you don't mind me asking a question, Bailey and Catherine and Stacey, like, are, you know, what's going, where are we at now? I'm so worried for what you guys are going through. I don't know. Is it Kim Coronado? Is that her name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is,
so Kim,
you know,
was unlawfully.
Yeah, I know. That's why. I mean, I was jailed unlawfully too. So I, you know, I kind of was really, I was following and reading updates, but, you know, just.
Which person is this?
So Kim Coronado is a, she sits on the governor of Wisconsin's task force on children with special needs, and she's the peer support for several moms in Walworth County. She's, everybody knows and loves her. She's an outspoken activist for social justice and against injustice, really, and was one of the public court observers and, you know, peaceful protesters in support of Julie Valadez, and was also doing filings for her because Julie is not in the country. And so in order to keep up with her filings, Kim helped, you know, deliver her filings to the Supreme Court and the appellate court. And the day that Julie filed her petition for writ of mandamus with the Supreme Court to let them know what was going on in Walworth was the day that Kimberly was arrested. Now, I believe that they wanted to arrest me initially, but they couldn't find me. So instead, they targeted Kim. Because what we're seeing is that anybody who helps Julie or anybody like Julie will get retaliated too. It's very like a mafia plot to just kind of destroy the movement, you know? So they issued... they didn't even issue, as far as I know, an arrest warrant for Kim. They just showed up with a search warrant, which strangely is not in her record, and they unlawfully arrested her. I say unlawfully because I don't believe that they have personal jurisdiction over her, nor do I believe that they have any evidence. From what I've heard...
And you can't just show
that
up
they
only add a warrant.
Yeah. Well, they had a search warrant. That's about it. But they didn't have an arrest warrant, as far as I know. So, and they arrested her, and they kept her there without a criminal complaint filed into the record for about 7 days. That's unusual. And then somebody who wasn't her retained lawyer waived her time limit for a preliminary hearing, which didn't occur until 2 days ago, or was it yesterday, the 17th, which is unconscionable. So therefore, they don't have any personal jurisdiction over her. But, you know, this guy who shows up for court saying that he's her attorney and represents her and waives her privilege is basically, I don't know, strangely, on the board of Waukesha County, the same board that allegedly retaliated against Julie for Julie's formal complaints about the boards and the board members connected to that board in other boards in Waukesha connected to more educational institutions like the WCTC. She actually reported their racism and their sexism overt racism and sexism. And so they retaliated against her because in Waukesha, the Waukesha County Board controls the funding and the budget for the Waukesha judiciary. So if you time it and you look at the records, you see a clear retaliatory action every time she starts to report something. And it kind of like came to a head when she started asking questions about how GALs are funded. So, you know, she's reported all of this to the FBI and to the U.S. attorney and to the attorney general there. But we don't know, I mean, because, you know, contrary to what all the rumors are going on in Ricardo's field of social media, the FBI will not tell people if there's a investigation going on. They will not talk to attorneys about it. They will not talk to parties about it. They won't talk to anybody about whether or not there is a federal investigation going on. So that said, I'd like to I underscore that point because Ricardo Valadez has and his attorneys have said on record that, oh, there's the FBI investigation, blah, 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 blah. Well, as a federal consultant, I can tell you for a fact that they don't do that. They don't talk about investigations to anyone. So whatever. Anywho, so they tried to – they basically unlawfully arrested Kimberly Coronado. They held her with a $100,000 cash bond. It's a $100,000 cash bond. She is not a flight risk. And the reason that the judge who gave her that $100,000 cash bond, the same judge who signed her search warrant, which nobody can find because it's on the record, basically stated because she abducted a child, well, she's not charged with child abduction. So why the high bail?
Stacey, this sounds like it's, Lizzie.
The whole thing is illegal. Yeah, the whole thing
it
is
sounds
illegal.
Like Lizzie's case.
But,
it sounds like Lizzie's
and so
case.
Now,
there's a case in my hometown, Katie Reiford, and it's like her case too.
Yeah. But I think guys
the child was in the father's custody, right? I saw the video. I have no words, Catherine. When I saw that video, because see, I just want to tell you, like, I spoke with Julie for so long, and she was always very, you know, transparent, but also professional, I would say. She kept things, you know, pretty private, and yet, but just the facts. Like, here's the point, the fact, that's it. No, you know, she never bashed him, even though we talked about abuse and what we went through.
That's
very
right.
Similar, you know, but she was always very positive, very helpful. Really, I was genuinely worried about her, but I saw the video. And Bailey, I don't know if you've seen that because I've watched it. And once I saw that, it really kind of gave
me. You know, I don't always get to watch everything.
Oh, that one is.
I get tagged
on
so many
things. The way he talks about his son, I want to vomit. Catherine, I'm Italian. So I have to, like, my blood pressure, I have to calm down. But I get so upset when I see how this father is talking about his autistic child. And you hear the child clearly stating, I mean, he's autistic, but he's, you know, articulate. He's also very clear on that his mother was very supportive, keeping him very active, which is important for any child with any kind of, like, learning disability or any kind of, you know, anything. Really, any child really needs to be busy these days, let's be real. But she kept him very, you know, active in things that would help his autism. And I think, I don't know, Captain, if that was the son, didn't, like, Ricardo have him, like, sleep in a dog bed or something like that? I could have swore we talked about that, and I thought,
it was like a foam mat on the floor.
It's horrible
what this poor kid went through.
He would
put him in a mental institution every time and treat it like a daycare, and his GAL put him in a, you know, basically blamed the fact that he was in a mental institution because of Julie, not because of Ricardo, even though Ethan kept saying that it was because of his dad. And so he suffered from pretty significant PTSD because of his father and his father's gaslighting and his GAL's obstruction of justice. And he doesn't trust hospitals. He doesn't trust schools, school campuses. You know, that's all because of them. And they didn't care what they were doing. They just wanted to fabricate evidence based on hearsay and conjecture in order to strip custody away from Julie, all as a retaliation for her continuing to report.
And it, you know how much worse it is when it's a special needs child? That's horrendous.
Correct.
And it's
correct.
Bad enough when it's a functioning child, but a special needs child, that's
correct.
That's like,
yeah, and he's
the
not
worst
giving
kind
services.
That you use.
No mercy.
Yeah.
It's infants,
he's not giving
it's
services.
Toddlers,
he's taking the kids' public benefits money, and he's using it for himself.
He's not using it
for the kids. That's technically public benefits fraud. And he says it in the record. It's in the transcript. And nobody's doing anything about it. And, like, you know,
I wanted to ask you, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a far-fetched, and I think I've mentioned it before, but I don't have a very strong platform on Facebook. Like, half the people criticize. I've got more criticism because most of, you know, friends, family, they just can't fathom this is happening. They think it's like you're just, you know, making these things up or something. I don't know. Although I do have people close to me who are witness, but, you know, I'm saying, like, the general public, just, it's like they think you're just drama, or they don't want to hear it really until it happens to them. Then all of a sudden it's a whole different story. But, you know, with the fact that, you know, the so much fraud and waste of tax dollars, I know, I mean, it's like, oh my God, how do you even fight this? You know, with the, you know, the, what is it? The Government Office of Accountability, where they audit the government. Is that an avenue? I think I talked to Julie about that, or maybe
yeah.
I sent a group text.
The way that the federal government can regulate is if the court, the judiciary actually accepts federal money. And so you wanted to find out which department that is if they accept DOJ money, then FBI has jurisdiction over any improprieties. All courthouses have to be ADA compliant and PTSD qualified under ADA protection.
Right.
And so that's another avenue for investigation, is every courthouse would need to provide equal access or reasonable access to anyone suffering from PTSD to say, you know, any sort of child abuse or witnessing child abuse or domestic violence, that kind of thing. If it's like Department of, I don't know what other departments, but the GAO is definitely an avenue. But the thing is about these federal offices is that they take between a year or two to fully investigate, and they only take cases that are very
high profile. I have to interrupt you for 1 second.
High profile.
I just want to tell my listeners that this is going to cut off in 40 seconds, but it will continue recording. So if you want to replay the show, you'll be able to listen to it after the show's over. So we will cut off from our listeners, but we can continue talking, and it's still recording. Okay, go on. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are avenues. But, you know, it's kind of something where you file your report, you keep up with it, you make sure that they're still around, you give them information on a regular basis, but you just kind of, like, put it on the back burner. And just keep going on with what you're doing. You never want to hang your hat on one avenue of relief. You want to just cover all bases. And then you also want to keep yourself safe. You also want to strategize. You want to be able to, in this time, in this area, if you have an attorney, you actually need an advocate for your advocate. You need an advocate for your attorney because your attorney can actually screw you over. I've seen it over and over again, and there's no accountability for them
either.
Well,
if they're part of the other side, if they're part of the organization on the other side, like even gals, they have attorneys that come with them to court.
Or they are attorneys themselves,
Well, they are. But they have an attorney that comes to court with them. Why? Why does that have to be? Because they're dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And
the best avenue is to file a federal lawsuit under 1983 or 1985. 1983 is infringement of rights under color of law. 1985 is conspiracy to infringe upon rights. And so you can ask for damages. If there are things like, fraud, somebody lied about your case that ended up in the, you know, stripping of your custodial rights, or somebody took your house. Like in Julie's situation, much like yours, Jessica, Julie's house was ordered to be sold, and the court actually ordered that they got to set the price and that they had to use, she had to use their chosen realtor. This is all
that
illegal.
This is disgusting. This is crazy.
Yeah, it's all illegal. And then the proceeds were, yeah, the proceeds were ordered. This is all on the record too. The proceeds were ordered to go to pay out GALs and attorneys who personally knew the judge.
I remember her showing me all those documents.
Yeah, that is
too.
Highly illegal.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I'm gearing up. The reason why I was late, ladies, I'm sorry. I was prepping for a hearing tomorrow here in Canada to intercede on Ricardo Valadez's fraudulent Hague petition and order, because what he does best is fabricate fraudulent orders. Because he has no evidence against Julie, none, then based on any sort of fact. He's trying to force Ethan back to silence him, and then arrest Julie and I to silence us. He's already got Kim, and he's done this all purely with the help of a judge who defied the law and rejected the court directive to reverse the unlawful custody of Julie's children, who should legally be with her, and instead, for some reason, are with their domestic abuser, who has still continued to abuse alcohol, who has lied throughout multiple times. It's all in the record. This is all proven, and it's unconscionable. And yet he's somehow able to file a sealed ex parte order for the removal and the illegal taking of his child, who is rejecting this removal and opposing it, trying to find an attorney to actually officially oppose it, trying to send him back to Wisconsin, where he would likely either be in juvenile detention or back in a mental institution, because they've placed him there before to silence him and discredit him, because this kid is a genius. He's straight up a genius. He's high functioning. He's very alert, very aware, very perceptive, very smart, and very kind-hearted. And the
like
things that
mama.
They've said about
yeah.
this child in the record, they should be
gross.
Ashamed
gross.
Of themselves. Absolutely ashamed, especially
so how,
his GAL.
How, Jessica and Stacey, I'm going to mute you guys because we're going to have to close out very soon. I appreciate so much that you called in, saved the day. I'm glad that you got to talk to Catherine. Whatever you can talk about, I don't know what you're allowed to speak up about. Like, what is the plan to end this? I mean, she can request the judge. She can file motions proving her case, because so much fraud and unconstitutional rights. To get him recused.
Yeah, she submitted her petition for writ of mandamus at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. If that fails, then she'll writ of certiorari all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, she's a protective mom, just like you ladies are, and she will do anything to protect her kids and expose the unlawfulness of what's going on in Wisconsin. If this need be become an international affair, so be it. If I need to go to jail unlawfully because of a domestic abuser just to, you know, make this even worse, so be it. But that may happen tomorrow when I show up at the hearing. He may be there, and he may have, you know, I don't know, U.S. Marshals with him. Who knows? But if I disappear for a bit, you'll know why.
Well, try and
it's
keep
ridiculous.
Me posted because, like
yeah.
I said, there are people on Facebook, like Jessica and some other people, that when they don't hear from you or see you post something, or Julie, they get concerned. And it is incredible how we've formed just in the last year. I know I'm involved more so since Grayson Kessler was murdered. And by the way, everybody, Grayson's Law was, I believe, passed in the highest court house, I think. I think the next step goes in front of the governor. The governor has to sign it. I believe today was the final, and it was passed unanimously. Obviously, it's not what we wanted, but it's a start. But, you know, the amount of people that have come forward, the movements, and, I mean, since I'm advocating, it's incredible. And I think that the more of us that come together and speak up and worry about each other and are there for each other, they can't break us and they can't take us down. And they're trying to keep court watchers out of the courtroom. You know, we're driving, like,
yeah,
a lot of the
and,
cases I'm watching
yeah, and, but,
are in Miami.
Yeah.
We're driving down to Miami.
More women need,
I mean, we
more women need to, you know, also apply to law school, because, you know, Julie, the only reason why, yeah. I mean, because she's not the only mom in Waukesha that this is happening to. You know, they're doing this to everybody. But Julie is the first that actually successfully escaped their unjust imprisonment of her, and then also because she literally taught herself law in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah. Kind of these moms. Lizzie was in jail filing. Stacey was helping her. You know, Lizzie, you know Lizzie's story, right?
I don't.
Okay. For another time. But all these women, there's so many of them that are becoming lawyers or can be lawyers because they are working on with advocates or on their own, and they're learning as they go along. And all this whole organization is doing is making women stronger, these women stronger, and bringing us from all over the world together. And they've created a movement of us like them, except we're protective parents. So, you know, that's where what I see from this.
Yeah, and then sue the AFCC. If you can't get the judges, if they haven't established lack of jurisdiction, then sue the AFCC, because they're the ones responsible for teaching these judges this crap of parental alienation, joint violence.
Yeah, well, that's gonna eventually fade out. I think it's slowly dying out. Unfortunately, it's the money that keeps the ball going and keeps the court cases going that should end, you know, in a couple of hours. You know, it's the judges, the gals, the lawyers, especially when they're in cahoots, one side with the other. It's a hard thing to take down the government, you know.
You can do it through the courts. You can do it through the courts, and you can do it legislatively. But you have to, if you're going to do it through the courts, it has to be on a constitutional basis. And clearly, this is all discrimination on the basis of sex. This is all illegal taking. This is all an infringement upon the right to self-defense. This is all cruel and unusual punishment. It's all infringement of due process and equal protection. There, you take your pick.
What I have been learning is that we all need to read the Constitution and know our rights, and really, really read it and understand it, because so many people's rights are violated in these cases over and over and over. And I mean, what do we have a constitution for? We're supposed to be the United States of America. So any final words?
No, thanks for having me on. It's really nice to actually talk to you over the phone, both of you.
I know.
I look forward to, you know, seeing you out there in social media, and hopefully I won't be unlawfully detained for fraud of a domestic
abuser. And you
said
Kim is still locked up?
Pray for me, everybody.
Yeah, we're praying
for
you. And you said Kim is locked up still?
Yeah. She's unconstitutionally detained in Walworth County. Yeah, she is still.
Yeah.
Am I on mute?
Mm-hmm.
No, I opened you so you guys could say final.
I thought you silenced me. Don't silence me. I've been too long. Oh, my God.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted Catherine to get in a couple of words.
No, yeah. I wanted to hear that because that's, you know, I was very concerned for you guys. And just, I don't know if there's a way. I really do get worried. I get vested in these things, you know. And I can't believe she's still in jail. That's insane. This is nonsense. This is sickening. They're letting
if you go to my Facebook, there is a post where you can actually email and call or fax the Walworth DA by the name of Zeke Weidenfeld. The Walworth District Attorney is who everybody should contact and say, drop those unlawful charges. She's unlawfully detained anyway because she never waived her time limit, right? Because the person who was representing her
was never properly arrested.
Mm-hmm. She was never properly detained and most likely never properly arrested because their probable cause is based on a couple of cherry-picked words out of a text thread that lasts literally 3 days.
Wow. I mean, I'm not surprised. Mm-hmm. I say, I'm not shocked at this because this is what they're doing.
Just to close, that 3-day text thread proves in and of itself in totality that Ricardo Valadez is a domestic abuser. He's continuing to abuse Ethan. Ethan ran away from him because of the continuing abuse and his fear of persecution from his GAL. So hence, they have no case.
Well, I sent you on Instagram the Me Too Moms website and Stacey sent it to you. And you can send them emails on judges and lawyers. And if it's, you know, if they could they can back it up, they will post it. They'll post it out there and they'll write Wall of Shame and the judge's name or lawyer's name or whatever and the information.
What about disability rights? Not to cut you off, but I know Catherine has to go. What about any disability rights? Like, can we reach out to any organizations about the fact that they're putting an autistic child through this? Because it's really pissing me off. So, like, what about that? Avenues there?
Yeah, that's the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. It would be discrimination on the basis of disability. Also, the ADA.
In Washington.
I believe the American Disability Association. Organizations
you could reach
like
somebody
that.
There, by the way.
Can reach also, there. Wisconsin has its own federal liaison, I believe. Every state does. To make sure that courthouses are compliant and are not discriminating against any party on the basis of disability, such as any mom who suffers from domestic abuse or child abuse, keeping their kids safe, suffers from PTSD. If they have a diagnosis and they get discriminated against by the courthouse on the basis of their ADA or their children are, say, autistic, and there are a lot of autistic children in Wisconsin for some odd reason, if the mother is the primary caretaker and is trained in giving services to their kids, and is there, you know, because that comes with the primary caretaking job, it is actually discriminatory to take those children away from them.
Right.
Yeah,
and give them to the abuser.
You
can't do that. You can't do that.
Yeah.
That's an argument that hasn't been put forth by any lame attorney that I've seen in Wisconsin. Sorry, Wisconsin,
you have
but it's
to
true.
Get- The court ADA advocate are not so easy to reach or to get. Like
then
you better
go straight
going
to
the
then,
state.
Then go up the chain of
the
command.
Or,
always go up the chain of command.
Yeah.
Always.
Right.
And I know this for
and
a fact.
Get the names of who's spoken to and everybody.
Maybe
I know because
make
you
a list of that.
Get the names, the numbers, the emails. Talk to their Senate representatives. In the congressional delegation of whatever state, you always want to talk to them and
They tend to throw it off onto somebody else. You know, like
they do, that's why you take their name and number because once you notify somebody who's working for the government, and they don't do something, then they're liable for what's called deliberate indifference,
right,
which is they're liable
deliberate
for their inaction.
I need that word, Catherine. Thank you, because I talked to so many people. That's exactly why I was jailed. Silenced. I was silenced.
Yes.
So could you say that again? It was deliberate.
Yeah. Deliberate indifference.
Deliberate
indifference,
okay,
which is failing to act on a matter that is of constitutional concern.
Thank you. All right, I'm gonna be praying for you.
Of course, this is just my opinion. I'm not a licensed attorney. That's my disclaimer. Thank you.
I know.
Take care, everybody, and wish me luck. Prayers. Bye.
Good luck, and
prayers.
Good luck to all your cases. You know, we're praying for you guys. She dropped off. Stacey and Jessica, thank you so much for coming on. I'm going to close out the show. Thanks for saving my butt tonight. I'm glad she made it on. And I'm glad you guys called in. I hope you got something out of it. I'm sure you did. You know, I see her on post stuff on Instagram all the time. And that's how I became friendly. That's how I got in touch with her. And I think, Jessica, it was you or somebody else that had said they were concerned about her?
It was me,
something,
yeah.
You posted something that you were concerned. You haven't heard from Julie. So I sent her an Instagram message, and she responded to me, and I responded to you. So that's what I'm saying. Like, we're all connecting together and helping each other, banding together for each other, and all they're doing is making us stronger. And there are going to be so many women attorneys walking away from this, because I know
I can't believe they're not walking away now. I really cannot.
Well,
even
we have down here in Florida many
uh-huh.
that are either working hand in hand with attorneys, they're just not going to get their law degrees, or they do have their law degrees, and they're helping their attorneys, or you know, working on their pro se, or some of them are working pro se with advocates that have all the knowledge, and they're learning, and I sit there and I watch them in action, and I'm in awe. Because what's going on in Wisconsin is happening right here in Miami. I mean, I'm in Broward County, so I'm one county away from Miami-Dade. And in Miami, it's so corrupted, and it's so much of the same stuff that Catherine was talking about. And it's the same judges, one covering, one recusing, the other one stepping up. Actually, they're a whole gay club. Think about that. One is married to the other. There are whole, and I'm not biased, you know, but they're a club of, they hate women. It's really,
like
really
that.
Sad.
I mean, I hate women. And read the comments.
You see it. They hate women. It's horrific. They hate women with a passion. It's like, how does a judge say, because I said so?
Right.
Because
Read my transcripts of how I was talked to, it was just, I felt like I was on trial for murder. I felt like the worst murderer in the country. And just talked down to, yelled at, you know, basically threatened as well. I mean, I was threatened, you know?
You exactly what they say. You go from domestic abuse in your home in a war zone into the court of domestic abuse and a war zone. It's really horrific. Anyway, I'm going to close out. Jessica, you're welcome to come on anytime. Tomorrow I will be on talking about my book on 12 p.m. Power Your Life with Dr. Joanne White. I will, once the show's over and I upload it to Buzzsprout and to SoundCloud and repost it, so whoever is not listening to the rest of it, because she only was going to be able to be on for an hour, so I set it for an hour and a half, and then the first almost half an hour, 20 minutes I was alone, and then you guys came on or whatever it was. I should have just left it for 2 hours, and this way whoever was listening would still hear us instead of having to replay the whole show or replay a portion of it. But whatever, it is what it is. But I will be on, and I will post it, repost her posts that she's been posting all over social media. So if you're able to call in and listen, or I don't think, it's a link to listen. It's not a call-in show. I will be talking about my book. So I wanted to give a shout out to that. And we will be praying. I'm meeting you guys. Thank you again. We will be praying for Julie Vasquez, for Catherine. I'm not even going to try to pronounce her last name. For Kim, for all these people that, for Narcisse, for Bradley, for all these children that are suffering in these horrific ways that should not have to, for all the women that are fighting. And remember, April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. It should be 365 days a year because children are innocent and they do not deserve to have to go through this horrific stuff all for money, because it's a business and it's a horrific business. I'm going to close out now. Have a great night. Remember, check out my website, thenevergiveupshow.com. Get a copy of my book. Thank you guys again, Jessica and Stacy and Catherine and whoever was listening. Have a wonderful night and never give up. Now